studio on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Brian Handyman Show. Hello there, neighbors, and welcome to show number 191. This is March the 11th, year 2007. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all, of course, designed with the blind in mind. Our hosts for the show, the Dependables, Don Shaw and Don Patterson, ladies and gentlemen.
What's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Well, it's like introducing Siamese twins. What do you mean? Both names in the same.
We have some very special guests. Phil is going to introduce in just a minute. My name's Tom Houston. But right now, let me introduce the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, Phil Parr.
Fine by the carton, Parr. What's happening, dude? How are things in beautiful Burke, Texas today?
Exactly. I'm watching a ball game. The Longhorns at the half, up by 5 over Kansas in the Big 12 championship, I might say.
Is that right? How much money you got on that one?
Nothing.
Is that a hockey, Houston?
No, this is basketball, college basketball.
Basketball. Let's see, how do they play that?
Oh, they bounce a little rubber ball.
Well, they do, don't they? It's what I've heard. I didn't really know.
That's about all I know about it.
Let me say hi to, first of all, to a couple of guests that we have in studio today. To Max Robinson from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey. Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to have you.
I'll sign autographs after the show.
Is that right? Well, Max has been helping us all weekend long sort out our problems and figure out what was really wrong with our lives and our equipment.
I think it was overmodulation.
That's what I thought it was. Let me introduce to you a fellow who's in his bedroom with his drum. We have him a bed set up in the booth, in the vocal booth here. He's in there with his drum. At Christmas, he's a little drummer boy. Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. John Conley, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey. How's it going?
Wonderful, man.
Well, if you don't stop that, John, we could have gotten John Bennett, for a little more money.
Oh, yeah.
We could have had the very best.
Could have had the top flight. Yeah. We really could have. John Bennett, you mean wide load? That's what you call him, isn't it?
I take it he never listens, or you wouldn't have said that.
Oh, no. John's health is not good, or he'd probably be here with us celebrating whatever we're celebrating. Ladies and gentlemen, from Boston, Massachusetts, the place where they do car talk, here he is, Tim Cummings. Hi, Tim.
Hey. Thank you very much. Nice to be here. The weather's a little better than last time, last year when I was here down in February. It was 9 degrees in Boston when I left and 75 degrees here. So
wow. How does that happen, I wonder?
I don't know.
And Tim informed us rudely at the table a while ago that they have jalapeno cheese up there.
We do.
We do not. We've
never heard of that.
We've
down
never
here.
Heard
of that. Jalapeno cheeses of Nazareth. Anyway, it's great to have everybody. We've been all weekend. These guys came in on Friday, and we've been sort of celebrating all weekend, having a big time working on.
We broke Phil's computer, and I broke it and fixed it again.
We've been working on trying to get. We've got both Conley and I both have the Olympus little recorder, and so we've been playing with those and trying to put books on them and figure out some things about them. And solved a lot of problems with those, didn't we, huh?
Yeah, we did.
That's Conley playing with his Olympus recorder in there. Wait, do it again.
Host, Tom Houston.
Hey, all right.
That's pretty good, isn't it, huh? He recorded that at the Lighthouse for the Blind in Dallas. You can tell by the echo, can't you? There was obviously no one there. It's nuts and bolts day or something.
Russell Stevens was probably his engineer.
Yeah, he and Russell are personal friends. But I tell you, Houston's going to read some list mail in a few minutes. We installed Skype yesterday on my computer at great. What was that?
That Olympus.
That was a computer. I just potted up the computer and that noise came. I thought, my God, what have I done?
Yeah, you need to hit spacebar on that when you get a chance. It's went to sleep.
Hit the spacebar?
Yeah.
Why don't I just hit the spacebar now?
Yeah.
And it should say something. Anyway, we installed Skype on this computer yesterday, and we found out that Skype will come along and change settings for you if you're not careful.
It will alter...
What your sound card does. Be very careful. I accused Tim all afternoon of sabotaging my computer, but it really wasn't him. Now, where's that feedback coming from?
I don't know.
I don't either. Let's hit enter and see what happens, okay?
It's probably somebody's headphones.
Somebody's headphones. All right, here we go.
Enter.
Uh-oh.
No.
Uh-oh, and now the other phone dialed.
Enter.
It's not working.
It is not.
Let's see, we can't answer the other phone, can we?
Why not?
Hi. How are you?
Great, man. How are y'all?
You called me.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were going to do that.
Well, either way.
I had no idea. We were just trying to call you on Skype.
Oh, no way.
And it won't work.
Oh, son of a bitch.
We're on the air.
All right.
Double SOB.
So I get to call your show and cuss then, right?
Yes, you can.
I appreciate it. Dale Campbell, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Where are you? You're in...
I'm in Antarctica, I believe.
Is that right? What is cold,
huh?
What is
it? It is. Yeah, we got off the plane. It was 60 degrees. Life was good. And then the next day, it fell to... wind chill below zero and dropped about 3 inches of snow on us. And
wow.
I'm thinking, man, I'm going to go back to Texas.
You're tired of this show.
Yeah, today we've got, winter Texas weather. You know, we're in the mid-50s.
In the mid-50s.
Yeah, no snow. A little bit of ice every now and then. You got to watch where you step.
So that's not bad, is it?
No, it's not bad. A light jacket and maybe, I'm out in shorts anyway because mind over matter.
Yeah, you figure you can handle it, huh?
You betcha. Betcha.
Did you get our message on? Are you in your room?
Or, yes.
So you heard our big nasty message on?
Yes, I did.
Good. We're glad.
I'll give you Candace's information.
We don't need that. It's a joke. We're just kidding. You know who all's here? You know Tim Cummings is here.
Yeah, Mr. Producer.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, Tim.
Yes, sir.
I don't enjoy this weather, man.
You don't.
I think you and Cheryl need to pack up and move south, brother.
Well, I wouldn't enjoy it with shorts on either. I'll tell you, I'm enjoying this weather quite fine.
It is wonderful.
It's
warm here today.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, in Texas, we're at about 80 degrees, essentially.
Yeah.
You know.
Candace has been giving me the daily updates, you know. It's like warmer when she goes to work in the morning before the sun comes up than the high here in the afternoon.
That's amazing.
That is.
Well, we also Max Robinson is here.
Max Robinson.
I'm here.
Right on, man.
How you doing up there?
I'm doing great. Great.
And John Conley is here. You met him in Houston,
yes.
I believe. He's a boy from Dallas.
Yes, sir.
Little drummer boy from Dallas. visiting here with us. We have people scattered all over the place. So you're in New Jersey getting a dog.
Yeah, I'm at Morristown at the Seeing Eye and getting some new furry eyeballs.
All right.
And Morristown, the Seeing Eye, that's the original.
It is the original.
Seeing Eye.
My little motto is, why drive a Pacer when you can drive a Cadillac?
All right. Well,
1929, I think.
1929.
How has your experience been there? I mean,
fantastic. You walk in the doors and... you're met with enthusiastic professionalism and courtesy. You're treated as a person, you know, not just as a blind person up here getting a dog or, you know, go stand over there and wait a minute or something. I mean, everybody here is an individual. And, between Doug Roberts and, his name's escaping me right now, the main trainers here, the two top trainers, have got over 80 years of experience in training guide dogs.
Is that right?
Dog guides, yeah. Yeah, so it's just awesome. We completed our first week of work, and we had to walk. You know, it's a basic route. You walk basically three routes with the dogs that the dogs have already been trained in to give them time to get to know you, and you get to know them, and you can start becoming a team. And then we'll break off and start doing a lot of freelance work, going to the country and malls and riding the trains, and then we'll go take on the big city. We'll go to Manhattan. And
really?
They better look out, because here comes Dale.
Dale, how old is your new dog?
He is a little over 2 years old. His birthday was January the 7th of 05.
And so who does the pre-training? You know,
The pre-training is done by actually the trainers here. It's a really cool system. Once the trainers for the trainer for my trainer right now is Steve Newman. And once he is done with this class, he'll go back and get a fresh batch of puppies that just came in from the foster homes and start all over again. And they'll start with basic traffic, awareness, and work all the way up after 4 months of guide work to where they will get a fresh batch of students and start matching the dogs up again.
How old is the puppy when he receives his initial training?
About between 7 and 12 weeks old, they get sent off to the 4-H families for raising. And that's where they're taught the obedience, you know, and to go outside and sit and stay.
These are foster families.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And then between 15 and 18 months, they come back to the seeing eye. And that's when they're evaluated, and their actual guide work training begins.
Very good.
And we found out it was interesting. Some of the ones that are rejected for one reason or another will become, a lot of them are working for, like, the New Jersey Transit Authority and at airports and by the police force and such for, you know, drug dogs and police dogs and things like that.
Yeah. Dale, I have a question. Are they giving you any experience with hybrid vehicles?
Yes. We had we got to check it. The seeing eye, somebody in Chicago donated a hybrid, one of the new Toyotas, to the seeing eye. And let me tell y'all what, it is like death on wheels for blind people.
It makes
you cannot
no
hear that thing at all.
Uh-huh.
Now, we got to go check it out in the parking lot, like Monday or Tuesday, I forget what day it was. And in the parking lot with no other sound around, you can hear it rolling up. And for anybody that's ever played golf, it sounds like an electric golf cart.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, you can hear it rolling up, but you can't hear the motor.
Yeah, you can hear the wheels on concrete.
And as we're out walking this route, this last route we do, they'll do traffic checks where they'll pull into a driveway in front of the dog. I mean, you know, you'll have 5 or 6 feet of clearance. But they'll pull in front, you know, and just to get the dog, because the dog is supposed to actually stop or kind of back up from the car.
Uh-huh.
And when we had the check with the hybrid, you didn't even know it was there.
Wow.
It's scary. It's really scary.
What did the dog do with the hybrid?
It saw it as a car and just stopped.
Yeah.
And Dean is his name, and he's a black lab. He actually stopped and took like a step back and, you know, avoided it just like he's supposed to.
But, Dale, I have a question. Since dogs and not being a CNI dog user, And this is the thing with dogs, are he's an obedient creature. He wants to be, so he stops and backs up. He's giving you a signal. But
yes.
Then if you told him to go, would he go?
No.
He will not?
No. It's the obedient disobedience in the dogs.
And they train him for that?
And they train him for that. If they feel that it's not safe, they will disobey your command to work.
That is
that could be a hard thing to train.
Kind of like my second wife. When I was, you know.
Right, right.
Disobedient stuff down good.
Your second wife suffered from a lot of maladies.
Oh, that was my first wife you're thinking of. My second
it's
wife.
It's when those leash corrections started coming in, huh, Phil?
It's amazing. She may be listening. I hadn't thought of that. So, and you've been there how long now?
I've been here for just a week now, a week and a day.
Week and a day.
So we flew in on a Saturday, and we got to the seeing eye and got settled in. And then Sunday and Monday, we went on what's called Juno walks. And that's where Steve walked with us with a harness and a leash, imitating a dog.
Yeah.
And he would walk faster, slower, pull harder on the harness, pull, you know, with less pressure on the harness, just to determine the pace of walk we liked and how hard we liked to be pulled.
Okay.
And then from there, all the trainers get together. We've got 16 folks in our class. And from there, we get our dogs. They sit down because they've worked with, each trainer works with about 10 dogs. Once they work with the dogs and the dogs pass their test, so to speak, because halfway through the training, the trainers put on a blindfold and walk the route with the dog. And, you know, another trainer observes and they see where the dog has some deficiencies and needs a little more work. And then at the end of the training, they do the same blindfold test and do the same thing.
And how long is the course?
The course for retrains, which I am, it's roughly 2.5 weeks. For new handlers, it's 27 days.
I was going to say, you've gotten a lot done in a week since you've been there.
Yeah. I mean, there's no messing around here. Our day starts at 5:30 in the morning with feed for the dogs. Then we take them out to park, which, if anybody wants to know what that is, spell it backwards.
Yeah.
And from there, we have breakfast served at 7 o'clock, which, I tell you what, if even if you don't want a guide dog, just come here for the food.
Right.
It is delicious.
See, it's a four-letter word. I'm having trouble with the spelling.
I'm sure you are. Moving right along.
And then from there, we start our morning walks. We usually have two walks in the morning, and you either go on the early walk or the late walk. One is usually around 8. The other is around 9:30 or so. You go out, walk your route, come back, Then lunch is served at noon, and after lunch, again, we have two afternoon walks, you know, usually one around 1, one around 2:30 to 3. Come back, and we have a park time. We also have a park time around 11 that I forgot to mention, but then park time's around 4:30 and dinner for the dogs, and then our dinner is at 5:15.
Okay.
And then from there, we usually have a meeting in the evening that'll last anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half. And then the last park time is 8 o'clock. And
doesn't leave much time for drinking.
It doesn't leave much time for drinking.
Yeah.
That it does not. I mean, we're on a pretty fast pace up here. So, like I said, we've completed the first route. We'll be walking the second route for 2 days, and then we'll do a solo trip on it, which is kind of cool. The solos are great because your trainer lags behind about 20 or 30 feet, and it's up to you to walk the route with the dog.
So he'd get there just in time to greet the ambulance.
Exactly. Yeah, call 911.
Well, obviously, you're going to win Mr. Congeniality out of this class. There's not much question about that.
No. We've got a really great class. We've got a good mix of we've got some Canadians, and we've got my walking partner, Todd Barnum, is from Colorado Springs.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got a lot of people from up here on the East Coast. And we've got a couple folks from Florida and one from, you know, North Carolina. So we've got a good mix of.
So you got some Canadians, some of those frostbacks.
Yeah, yeah. That's who I'm blaming for bringing this cold weather with
them. That's right, coming across the border.
Did you check their papers, Dale?
Yeah, I checked that. So now, we won't let them into Texas, but, you know.
Yeah.
In the New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay. Well, obviously, they've sold you, I'll tell you that, and you about sold me. I may go get a dog somewhere.
I tell you what, it is, it's amazing. It's amazing. And the thing, since the last time I was here, almost a decade, well over a decade ago, I mean, they've made some changes in the training. And one of the biggest things is, like, say you're walking down through a strip center, and there's three or four stores that you've gone in and out before. The dog will show you those stores. He'll remember, hey, do you want to go in here? He'll ask. And before, we always gave the phooey command, which is, you know, bad. Gordon,
yeah.
And then hup up to keep on moving. Now they've changed that from a negative, the phooey, to a positive. They just say leave it. So when the dog shows it to you, you just tell them leave it and move on, so they won't associate that door with bad behavior.
That's probably a great idea.
Yeah, I think
it's really nice.
That's probably good. Listen, I'll tell you what we'll do. We're at about 15 after. Why don't we, are you with us for the duration?
Yeah, I'm here for the duration. I made some adaptations for me, so we're good to go.
Houston, can you hang on a minute?
Yeah.
Why don't we take a short break and come right back, and we'll read some list mail and talk about handyman things.
Right on.
Very good, sir. Hang on. We're doing the blind handyman. Got lots of special guests, and back in just a minute. Hang on.
Should have the same information concerning United States currency as their sighted brethren.
Now, if you think this is a great idea, thanks to the American Council of the Blind, there is something you can do.
You'll find a screen reader friendly site and an online petition waiting for you at www.moneyforall.info.
That's www.moneyforall.info.
Come be a part of history with the American Council of the Blind. www.moneyforall.info.
We get the lame vocal, don't we? Hello there, I'm Phil Parr with the Blind Handyman. John Conley is here. Max Robinson is here. Don Shaw is here. Tim Cummings is here. Don Patterson, Tom Houston, Dale Campbell. Did I miss anybody?
No.
A full crew.
I think we've got a full crew.
Can you move
today.
Over a little bit, Phil? You're crowding me, man.
Boy, it is crowded. It is crowded here in the old... we got folks sitting at all bases around the console here. Anyway, I guess we ought to do some handyman things. Houston, are you ready?
Yes, sir. I'm ready.
All right, sir. Read us some list mail,
here's
if you don't
guy,
mind.
His name is Johnny. He had somebody staying with him for 3 months that had a truck in his driveway that was leaking oil.
Oh, man.
Now, John's question is how do I get the car engine oil off his driveway?
Well, I don't know. Anybody know?
Concrete cleaner might be a start. I don't know. Concrete
sweep. First, if there's a lot of it piled up, or, you know, a lot of it collected, throw some kitty litter on it.
Yeah.
Same and that'll kind of soak
concrete
up some of the
sweep.
Oil first.
Yeah. If there's a lot of it. If it's just a stain of oil or just shows and it isn't wet, concrete cleaner will certainly do it.
Definitely. Definitely.
But then if you're blind, how would you know you'd die? Just call somebody, right?
Right. Clean the whole driveway.
Just clean the whole driveway.
Yeah.
Be the thing to do.
Anyway, Clifford Wilson mentioned kitty litter. Well, litter, I might add.
Did he?
Yes.
Clifford Wood. He probably has a lot of kitty litter.
He said apply enough to cover the spot and walk around on it, grinding your heels as you go.
Uh-huh.
Leave it there for about a week or two, and if it rains, don't take it away. After it's been ground into the concrete, sweep or either vacuum it up,
mm-hmm.
and most of the oil residue should disappear. I would not try this with an asphalt drive, as you would probably mess up the surface of the asphalt. Yours truly, Clifford.
Is this on fresh oil?
Yes.
I take a handful of dirt. I've done that before, and I've just thrown dirt right then. And it does fairly well.
Yeah, you just want something that's going to absorb that oil and get it up off the concrete. Yeah.
Dirt kitty litter is just basically dirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you don't have any kitty litter, for you cat non-lovers, just I throw dirt and don't take, you know, 2 or 3 days later, just go.
Sweep it up.
Sweep it up.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you know, Clifford Wilson, I'm searching my memory banks, which, you know, there's not a lot there. But I think he was in my original class.
Is that right?
Yeah, over when I got Kelsey way back.
You think so?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Our own Clifford Wilson at the Houston Gathering.
Yeah, and I didn't even think about it until after the Houston Gathering was over. And I thought, man, I wonder if that's the same guy.
I wonder. I bet
if you're listening, let me know.
I bet if it was, he will let us know.
Yeah.
That would be good. We haven't had Clifford on in a long, long time. We need to do that again.
Yeah,
you know, he'd be a good guest for y'all on Cooking in the Dark, too.
Yes, he would.
He does a little outside chefing, I think.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's about that time, isn't it?
Getting pretty. We could do it today if you were here.
Yeah. We'll do it anyway and think of me.
Oh, we will. We're having
We had broiled flounder the other night for dinner. We had ribeyes the other night for dinner.
Oh, man.
Are you kidding me?
No, sir. My goodness.
Whoa.
Well, we had ribs from Bodacious Barbecue and Mary Shaw homemade potato salad yesterday.
Okay, now you're not playing fair.
And today we had your other favorite meal, Dale.
Tamales?
Tamales.
Yeah. And we talked about the record that you held, and it still holds.
Still stands?
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely still stands.
Y'all find somebody to break it, I'll come back and... We thought
Connolly might break it, but he didn't
10.
Even come close.
Oh, man, all right.
I had 10.
Oh, about 10, Tom. 10. You had 18, so it was far. You know.
I'm just a little boy.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. We had tamales for that was our lunch today, and we're going to Don Pat's for a homemade charcoal hamburger tonight.
Fantastic!
And Friday night we had chili.
Friday night we
Fantastic.
Had
man
blind weekend chili. So we
see, I had chili too, but it was the shivering kind of chili.
The air conditioner finally go off.
Yes.
Heavens, that fan's driving me nuts. All right, Tommy, go ahead.
Here's a guy who claims he's got a weird problem. He says, "Hi, group. I have sort of a strange problem. I need some advice to fix it.
All right.
I live in an apartment, and when it was built, the thermostat was put on the chimney.
Uh-huh.
I have the talking thermostat, and when all the three burners are on, the wall in my place gets quite warm, about 15 degrees warmer. If it's real cold, the wall is cooler because I think the chimney's cold, but when the weather's warm, it's so much hotter. What can I do without moving the thing?
Nothing.
How can I insulate it from the hot wall? Thank you in advance for some advice. Bruce.
That is a strange problem.
But, right? And why would they put one?
Well, no, that doesn't make any sense.
That was such poor planning. Gosh.
Really?
But, you know, moving a thermostat sounds like a big deal, but it's really not.
No.
It's not a big insurmountable thing that you can't do. It'd be hard for a blind person to do it. Really, maybe, what are they, three wires or four?
Four wires.
And they're all different colors.
If you wanted to move it and you had no sighted help, the thing to do would be call somebody could see.
I mean, seriously, call a heating and cooling company or even an electrician, either one.
No, you can do it yourself. That's just something you can do. You did it, Shaw. Moved yours. Hooked up your new one.
Yeah, I guess it would depend on how... Where the unit was at and where the wires ran. But inside a chimney, I wonder where...
Yeah, that's a strange...
That's kind of strange. Yeah. I wonder if he could take some sort of an insulation board, you know, like some blackboard or some sort of a...
And just put behind it?
Just move the, you know, unscrew the thermostat from the wall, put some of the insulation behind it, and mount it that way just to give it a little bit of an insulation between that and the fireplace wall.
What could the guy have been thinking?
But maybe he didn't have enough wire.
That's,
15 degrees is quite a differential. And
it sure is.
Insulation doesn't really stop heat. It just slows it down.
Right.
And so I would say move the thing.
Well, it sounds to me like, in other words, it's on the chimney when we're talking about, but, you know, even on a wall, like in my home, there's still a 2x4 wall where the, you know, they make a square where the chimney goes up. Now, this could be a brick chimney. I don't know if it's if it's mounted on bricks, he might be better off.
Did it say, Tommy, it was an older house?
No, he said it was an apartment.
Oh, an apartment.
See, I can't imagine. Well, I mean, I don't know. Wherever it's mounted,
workman just said, we'll just put it here. We run out of wire. We'll just put it here.
They put it in on Friday.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, don't put it on an outside wall.
No.
But you know, if it's just an apartment and you're not in love with it, buy you a good talking thermometer and put it where you think you'd put your thermostat and calculate the two. If the talking thermometer that you put where you want it says 1 degree, figure out what the one on the wall says and set it accordingly.
You know, that's probably not a bad idea. If you just had something that talked, because you don't, you know...
If you don't want to move it, that might be...
If you don't want to move it,
It's not your apartment. I mean, you don't want to reconstruct the guy. You don't want to remodel the guy's apartment.
But can you still buy these indoor outdoor talking thermometers like we all have one of?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
At LS&S or something.
Blind MySmart probably would sell you one.
Blind MySmart have those?
Blind MySmart has them.
So
one crazy thing with those talking thermometers is you've got to have somebody sighted almost to help you set them up.
Is that right?
Yeah. They don't have the directions or the, you know, as you push the buttons to get them all set up, it doesn't speak.
I think we're talking about
talking about the cooking thermometer.
Yeah. No. I'm talking about indoor-outdoor thermometers.
The one I've got, you just hang on the wall and push the button.
What is there to set up other than the time?
Well, the time, you've got some of them have time and alarm and things like that. If you just want a tip, you can hang it and push the button.
I think Dale is talking about the little fold-up thermometers.
He's talking about the real thing, setting the time and date and all that.
Because
they'll alarm, it'll do height, like if it gets
below. It'll say good morning.
Right. You can set the temperature where it'll tell you if the temperature gets so low outside that you need to turn your swimming pool pump off or need to do this. All kinds of alarms and things.
Yeah, now I've got one lady that she bought that talking cooking thermometer we sell, and she uses it to check air temperature and soil temperature for orchids when she repots them.
Probably not bad.
I would buy the little, just an indoor thermometer that we had, the little fold-up kind. That's all you need. Set it on the shelf across the room from that one. If you want your room at 74... figure out what it says on the thermometer and set it on the thermostat.
That's a good idea. Change the thermostat until you get 74 on that dude across the room.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh.
I don't think you can buy those fold-up ones anymore, but surely there'd be the equivalent somewhere of those. Those are Radio Shack. And everything Radio Shack makes, it's worth a damn. They quit making quick.
That's why they're going in the toilet.
That's funny. Remember the volt-on meter they made? It was great.
Yeah, well,
they just quit.
The rule at Radio Shack is if you see something you want, buy it.
You better get
it
then.
It won't be there next year.
Buy a case of them.
What does Radio Shack sell anymore? Why are they in business still?
They're
phones and computers.
No computers anymore.
No computers anymore. Really?
Wow.
So what are they for? What are they good for?
They have keyboards too, music keyboards.
Really?
Yeah.
Not for me.
Now, you know, you used to be able to go in there and buy any type of little circuit you wanted, a mercury switch or a relay switch or any of that stuff, too, and I don't even think you can do that anymore.
They still have some of that, but it's disappearing fast.
I went in there with an old screw-on jack connector, like for a Shure microphone.
Amphenol.
And they never heard of it. And I said, honest. So I figured, okay, that's the two clerks. Can you look in your catalog? It's not here.
No, Amphenol connector was not there.
Yeah. And see, that used to be their calling card.
Well, the other thing, too, is it really depends on what Radio Shack you go to. Because sometimes
that's true.
You have a good one, and their salespeople are sharp, and sometimes they're not so sharp.
Dull.
Well, I did read the other day.
The dullest knife in the drawer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I read the other day that every 90 seconds in this country, some Radio Shack employee says, you can use this for alarm clock, too.
Well, then put that across this room from your thermostat.
That could be the one line of the day.
Yeah, I think so.
You try to win these things. Yeah, just get it and around your throat. We solve this person's problem.
No, let's see what the answer was.
We've beaten it to death.
Did anyone give an answer?
Responses?
Do what?
We've never helped anyone in our life.
Did anyone give an answer to this guy's question?
You know, I didn't print it.
Oh.
I didn't see one.
Okay. Well, you saved us again, Tom. Then we don't look like you're babbling
idiots. Don't look like stupid.
He had a problem. Now, here's a guy that's really got a problem.
We need that.
He says, I have a corner of the room where a cat is peed over and over and over for some time.
Cats don't do that.
He says, I think the pee got on the wall because I ripped the carpet out and the smell is still fairly faint there.
Yeah.
Any suggestions for best smell-proofing paint to use?
Move. M-O-V-E.
Well, and I wonder what is under the carpeting. I mean, the type of decking. Is it a concrete or if it's wood? Because that urine will soak into all of that.
If it's wood, you're in trouble. Concrete wouldn't hurt, would it?
Concrete, it'll soak into.
Been there, done that. We had a cat for 17 years.
Wow.
In the corner where his sandbox was, even now, he's been dead for, about as long as he lived. He's been dead about 16 years.
And still.
And when the humidity gets high and when there's weather gets wet, you can still smell that ammonia smell.
But, Max, when the cat dies, you're supposed to throw away the cat box. That's your problem.
If you'll get that out of the corner of it.
They've got a little candle set up. It's a little shrine.
I think that may solve your problem.
Did you put any like concrete sealer over the top of it or anything?
It was a hardwood floor.
Oh, my God.
The floor is ruined. And the people who buy the house after we're gone are going to have to redo the floor,
right,
in that room.
But he was also asking about a wall, and there's this primer, it's Kills or something.
Kills, yeah.
And it's a mold primer. I would do a double coat of that on the walls. And then repaint. Actually, I thought some of the new laminates. Floor, because that we've got a similar problem with dogs, and we still have carpet, and so we've been in the house like 3 years, and they've thoroughly trashed out the carpet, and we're thinking of going to these laminates.
Don Pat, go to a website called iFloors.com.
Right.
Oh, really?
They have. That's who we ordered our floor from.
And they're supposed to be resistant, like animal kind of. You know, if you clean it up. Quick,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the laminate flooring is awesome. At iFloors.com, if anybody's looking for laminate flooring, they have comparisons of all the major brands. This one, we were looking at Wilson Art, and it was almost $360 a square foot. And Candace found an off-brand that had the same ratings for like $1.20 a square foot.
Right.
Wow.
Well, yeah. iFloors is a wonderful source if you're looking into getting into it, because it has a lot of explanations and things like that as far as the different types of flooring.
That's called, it's iFloors.com. What is it?
iFloors.com.
Well, I'll be there because we're fixing to make the big move.
Yeah, because you're fixing to do it.
I'm hoping to come home to new laminate flooring. I'm hoping it'll be done while I'm gone, so I won't be dodging everything. And
Yeah, moving the, that's what my, that used to move the furniture around, she got mad at me. But anyway, that's why Max's room has new carpet in it for that very reason. The room you're staying in, Max.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's why, because Sarah wasn't real happy with the situation when she first got here, and she marked that room for us, and so we got new carpet in there.
So, but on the painting, I would use that Kjolz.
What's it called?
Yeah, Kjolz.
K-I-L-T-Z.
I don't know that. Well, see, what the cats leave behind is not not anything that's living. It's just ammonia compounds that will just slowly seep out, and I don't think you can ever really contain them. You know.
No.
You can
that's the thing. Like
down.
You were saying too, when the humidity rises or the temperature rises. So will the odor.
Yeah.
Well, then our first suggestion was the best, Max. Move.
Yeah.
Right?
Move.
M-O-V-E.
Yeah.
Move.
Burn the house down.
Just to move.
There's a guy that says that you could get a good enzyme cleaner from a janitorial supply or pet shop and spray the area before you paint it again.
Might have a point.
I would go there.
Yeah.
Can't
that
hurt.
Might work.
That'd be cheaper than moving.
Hurt. What could it hurt? It'd be cheaper than burning the house down.
It sure would.
Yeah, enzyme cleaner. That's probably a good idea.
Then it'll smell like a nursing home. Pino-pine over pino-pine.
Man, nursing homes. Please don't do it. All right, you got another one, Tom?
Yes, I've got one more here. It says, this guy says he has a mesh fence to help keep his dog in the backyard. He finds that grass grows up into the meshing and is all but impossible to trim neatly off the fencing.
Mm.
Does anybody have any advice as to what I might place along the bottom of the fence to keep the grass from growing into the fencing?
Well,
I was thinking of some sort of barrier that would be about 6 inches wide and lay under the fencing so to prevent grass from growing into the mesh wiring.
Oh. Okay, been there, done that also.
All right, how do you solve that problem?
All right. You buy a general herbicide, something that will kill any living vegetable, and you use you get one of these pump-up sprayers, and you set it to the very narrow spray, and you just spray right along the fence, and you do that maybe 3 times of a season.
And that'll do it.
And then you have to clean out the grass that's already grown into the fence, but you'll only have to do that one more time. And you just keep that herbicide sprayed. And our next door neighbor has a fence, and so I've been there, done that. So
yeah, vegetation killer I think is a good one, and
Roundup
it'll wipe
like
it out.
Roundup, weed be gone.
You want to go for something that is a vegetation killer, and be careful when you put it down. I mean, if you get it on bushes or trees it'll run a heck of a deal on them too.
You've knocked them out.
Weed be gone will not kill grass.
No.
No?
You need something. That's right. You need something that will kill grass.
Weed be gone will just handles weed.
Everything.
Weed be gone. If you poured it on your stash, you wouldn't have any. Would you?
Up here in East Texas, we used to take a rat. If I was this person, I don't know how much fence he's got, but you could put that in your sprayer as well, diesel fuel.
Yes.
If you ever kill it one time, then it's easy. So either use the weed killer herbicide that Max is talking about, or just good diesel fuel.
Yeah, and one thing with diesel fuel, you need to be careful when you put it down because it will stain.
Yeah, just do under your fence row.
You know, and something else I've used before is fertilizer.
Really?
In a huge quantity.
Oh, I get it.
And it actually burns.
It burns.
You know, burns through. The easiest thing is the diesel fuel or the vegetation.
The diesel fuel, and even there, a day or like you can go set fire to it. I mean, you know, you could. I've seen them. I mean, most of the people clean their fences under here. I mean, like you got a long strand up. No, you got a long strand of barbed wire fence. You know, these guys. I see a guy. This guy must have, you know, 20 acres, and his fence looks so neat, and he.
These mesh fences are galvanized, which means they're plated with zinc.
Right.
If you burn them, if you expose them to fire, it burns off the zinc.
Well, don't do it.
And they'll rust.
Set fire to it.
So you don't want to set fire to it.
Can you edit that out? Yeah. Don't set fire to your fence.
I would say that the diesel fuel presents somewhat of a hazard of catching fire.
Diesel fuel has got a very, 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 very low flash point. much lower than gasoline.
Well, yeah, that's another reason not to use it.
That's what they used diesel fuel when the Robert was burning out when he built the house. That's how he started his fire every morning.
Right.
And it just, didn't take, just pew, and it was gone. And anyway, I didn't think setting the fence on fire was a good idea. I rejected that out of hand.
I forgot he said a mesh fence, but under a...
What is a mesh? I've never seen a mesh fence.
I wonder if he's maybe calling what we call a chain link fence.
That's what I was thinking, like a chain link fence.
I think that's what it means, yeah.
Oh, that's what he's calling a mesh fence.
Yeah. I bet you it is.
I've seen, I hate them, but I all right, you through, John?
That's it.
Is that it?
Yes, sir.
That's it for list mail.
All right,
well, we'll let you get back to your ball game, I suppose.
You guys have a good one.
We will, sir.
And, Pat, I don't do this on purpose, buddy.
I think you just don't like us. Emily had a... I'm not going to tell you what we were going to have for dessert.
She said,
I'm having this because I know Tom would love it.
Listen, how'd you do getting home?
Yeah, how was the trip back?
Well, I'll tell you what, I had it missed coming up Highway 59 that scared the heck out of me.
Going home?
Yeah, but I put the pedal to the metal. And I don't know if it was something in there that I sucked out or what, but it cleared up. And then when I made my left on hand turn onto my street, it did real smooth, and I got it in the backyard and got out of it. And the next time anybody gets in that truck, it's headed to the mechanic.
Well, maybe you fixed it.
But it could have just been something
The carburetor that you got out.
Could have been lots of things.
I think what it's going to be is a fuel pump.
Tom, I'll start walking.
If it were a fuel pump, it would not have taken you home last night.
It seems like it happens after it gets plenty warm.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Max was thinking. I think it was you, Max, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking fuel pump. But
when you start getting gas, after it warms up and it starts missing, of course, it could be something in the filter.
Yeah. Well, did you say they had changed?
Fuel pump to me.
Did you say they had changed the filter the day before?
2 weeks ago.
Well, they washed it out.
They stirred things up, and they may have stirred something up that came loose and got in there, and then it may have gone on through. It may have ingested it, and if you're lucky, it'll be fine now. But
I'm going to let Randy Kirkland drive it a couple of days and see what he thinks.
That's probably wise.
I'll drive it.
You don't.
The fuel pump then will be the worst of your worries.
Least of your worries.
But you don't trust it. You're going to take it and let him work on it.
No, when you got a wheelchair on the back of a truck, you can't get stranded out here.
I guess the
river bridge.
I guess in the middle of the river bridge, we got the car died. Tom and I were going across the river to fetch libations, and the car died in the middle of the bridge coming home.
On a two-lane road, guys.
A wheelchair guy and a blind guy on a two-lane road in the middle of the bridge. They were just,
with a whole bunch of libations.
We had three cases of...
right on.
And then they called me when they resumed their journey and said, "We've got it under control, Pat. We're coming to get you." And like a fool...
You got in with it?
Like a fool, I got in with it.
Yeah, that's our story, and we're sticking to it.
Mm, well,
but, we had plenty of to drink if we'd just gotten stranded too bad. Well, Tommy, we're going to go, and thank you, sir, and go watch your ball game, all right?
Okay, guys, see you later.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. We'll take a little short break, and we'll come back. I don't know what we're going to talk about. We'll figure out. We'll come up with something, I bet you, though. Hang on, more of the Blind Handyman coming up.
Yeah, do you hear that, Phil? That's a good idea, Max. Talk about his radio desk project, Sam. Yeah.
Come be a part of history.
It is my fervent belief that blind persons, regardless of race, creed, color, or party affiliation, should have the same information concerning United States currency as their sighted brethren.
Now, if you think this is a great idea,
thanks to the American Council of the Blind. There is something you can do.
You'll find a screen reader-friendly site and an online petition waiting for you at www.moneyforall.info. That's www.money4all.info. Come be a part of history with the American Council of the Blind. www.moneyforall.info.
Yeah, the music today has been really strange.
As if you hadn't had enough of us, we're back. The Blind Handyman crew, Dale Campbell, John Conley, Max Robinson, what is that guy's name? Don Patterson, Tim Cummings, Don Shaw, and of course, I'm Phil Parr. And it's good to have you with us today. Where are we going to talk about? Max mentioned that you had been working on a computer radio desk. What was it?
A ham radio desk.
A ham radio desk.
I've dadoed the shelves into the sides and got it all glued together. Got everything lined up and squared up. Everything, checked it with the square. It's perfect. And so I started just the Thursday before I came down here. I started sanding on it. So it's all assembled and
sanding is the beast.
Yeah,
you know,
tell
but
me
it will
about
also
it.
turn yeah. a project into a jewel.
Well, I got my arms got very tired, but I'm gonna keep at it and do a little each day and till I get it done.
You're not gonna buy the little palm sander?
I don't know. I might be convinced.
Buy the palm sander.
Yeah, no kid.
Let me show you one when we get off the air.
Okay. I'm a little concerned about, you know, being blind. I might do it too long in one place and really screw it up.
If you start with your grit, you know, and start changing your grits, start with about 80 or 100, then move up to, you know, 120, 150, and move on up to your finish of around 220 to 400.
Yeah.
Even if you stay in one area, you're not going to, the palm sander, it's not like a belt sander, where if you stay in one area, next thing you know, you've eaten all the way through the woods.
That's what I'm worried about.
Palm sanders are very gentle little.
The palm sander is a much calmer beast.
Okay. Very gentle little thing.
Yeah. Gentle little thing, okay.
When you did your dadoing, did you lay like both sides of the supports together? Like say your left side and your right side?
Yes.
Lay them and route the whole, or did you cut them on a table saw?
I did them with a router, and I did exactly what you said. I clamped them together to another piece of wood so they stay lined up, and I got them, and they're perfect. I got them lined up just perfectly.
That's the best way to do it. Lay it out how you're going to have where your shelves are going to run with each side piece, and put your straight edge down, run that router through it, and voila.
Yeah, now, I don't know if you read the email, but Dan Rossi did some mismeasuring on his closet, and he got the dado off by the width of the dado.
Oh, no.
So there's one shelf that you put stuff on kind of rolls
kinda
to the
one. Yeah, kind of level the pit there.
What kind of wood, Max?
Birch plywood.
Okay.
Wow.
And then you're gonna put a little banding on it, or
I've got tape to go on the edge.
Okay,
iron on edge tape, and then I'm gonna finish it with something that's pretty. It's real close to a clear finish. Leave it looking kind of natural.
Does your stain have the polyurethane in it?
Yeah, it's a polyurethane finish with very little stain.
Fantastic.
I don't remember what it's called now. It's been a little while since I bought it. But
yeah.
I came across it's a color called honey oak, which is very light in tint, but it has the polyurethane in it, and it really brings the grain out. It's really nice. And when you stain, too, kind of use your hands. Wear gloves or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I've been reading. Somebody said you could apply it with your hands just fine.
And one thing, if you rub it on with your hands, it's kind of crazy, but the heat from your hands actually helps the stain to soak in a little bit.
Is that right?
And what you want to do is do a little area, rub it on, you know, rub it on, and then have another towel to rub to wipe it off.
I see.
So you don't get a bunch of globs all over the floor.
Right. Gotcha.
And some suggestions were even to, once you got a coat of it on, to go back over it with steel wool.
Yeah.
And then wipe it off with a tack cloth. And then put another coat on.
Put another coat. Uh-huh. Yeah, I've also
heard
that.
And then steel wool that down. And a last suggestion for the top of it, use a like a Johnson's paste wax or something.
Uh-huh.
And wax it. And it'll make it almost waterproof.
Now, that
water
I hadn't
up
heard.
On it.
Yeah.
Well, if you could do it with your hands as a blind person, that would be a great advantage.
Oh, yeah, because yeah, you can totally feel where,
sure, what you've done.
At, where you've done it at,
where
you haven't.
Oh,
man.
Is.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. The last thing I did, Luann stained it for me.
Okay.
I didn't know I could do that.
See, that's even better.
Yeah, Max, why don't you give her a call?
Yeah. Yeah. When I build stuff, I love the construction of it, you know, planing it down and, you know, taking rough stock with bark on it down to a finished product, but the sanding and the staining is not my favorite part, but it's probably the most important as to making the finish look just really rich and
yeah. You need to have a nice finish on it.
Yeah, that's the most important part because it looks like hell if you don't, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. It looks like
something I'd build, which I've never built anything you could put in the house. I've built a lot of stuff.
The birch plywood, too, is just awesome.
Is it soft? Yeah. Or
it's hard.
Is it hardwood?
Yeah, it's a solid core like plywood. What, 3/4 inch, Max?
Yeah. 3/4 inch, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice plywood.
It's really nice. It's almost like an AA grade plywood.
It is. Yeah,
I wonder, Max, what determined what your material that you bought. You know, they make this synthetic stuff now that they build cabinets and. I mean, did you go for the stained look? I mean, is that why you chose the birch?
Well, I don't know. I'd worked with birch plywood before.
Yeah.
So I've made a desktop. Sue took an old dresser that she didn't want to use as a dresser anymore. She wanted to use it as a work table.
Okay.
So I made her a top for it that was hinged so she could raise it up and get into the drawers.
Mm-hmm.
And I made that out of birch plywood.
Okay.
And then she did the staining on it and the finishing. And then I made some things, some small things out of the leftover pieces. She needed a 6x4, I think it was, something like that, or 6. I don't remember. But there were some leftover pieces from a 4x8 sheet of plywood that I got to play with. And so I just like the way it works and the way it looks and everything. So that's what I've chosen.
Yeah, using the hardwood plywood, be it birch or oak or you know any of those, it's nice because you get a big coverage area that's, you know, maybe a half or a third or a quarter of the cost of actually buying the real stock.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And once you put the banding on it or the trim on it, like you're talking about doing, you know, it covers up the dados.
Yeah.
It hides everything, and I mean, you end up with something that looks like it's made out of birch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that trim tape that you mentioned a while ago. I'm not familiar with that. How do you do that?
Well, I don't have any experience with it yet myself, but they say you iron it on with a you know, like a clothes iron, and you have to trim it because it's wider. I think it comes an inch wide strip, so you have to trim it with a knife. And I don't know how that's going to go. I'm going to do what, you know, when you're doing something with something like paint remover or something, I say try it on an inconspicuous area.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try it on the back, on an inconspicuous area, and see how that goes, and sort of learn how to use it there, and then do the
And you know,
shows.
If you have difficulty, about the only difficulty I might see with it would be keeping it straight.
Oh, which would be a terrible difficulty.
I bet if you were to clamp it loosely at one end,
yeah,
and then lay it out first, you'll be able to feel with your finger on the edge of the mold or the edge of the cabinet to keep it straight.
Is it sticky? Well, sticky side?
It doesn't stick on contact, from what I understand.
Yeah, it won't stick until you apply heat.
Okay. So you'll have some forgiveness to be able to line it up and then put the iron on it.
And if you do end up having some trouble with it, you know, you can always buy just the regular little molding.
Yeah.
Because they make like a flat molding. I mean, that's when I put those kitchen cabinets out in the garage and made that, you know, set of cabinets, I guess.
Yeah, the upside down cabinets.
Yeah, I bought some of that trim. I mean, it's you know, half inch, three quarter inch wide.
Called lip mold.
Molding. They have, yeah, you know, quarter round. They've got all kinds of stuff.
Uh-huh.
I use that to cover up, to hide the seams.
Yeah.
You know, where the cabinets were stacked together, and it tacked on and in place real easy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would, if you did that, you'd have an excuse to buy a little $50 electric tacker.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to do this and convince Sue that I can make something that looks really nice, and then I want to try to build a new set of speakers for the that will go in the living room.
Fantastic.
She has to be convinced that it will look really good and not look, you know, like something somebody kludged together.
Right.
Before
you know,
she'll let me do
that. I tell you what, Max. Yeah. I mean, knowing you, take your time and.
Oh, I do.
You'll have no problem doing that, getting that that edge tape put on.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see a problem with that at all. And the nice thing, it does trim very easy because it's so thin.
Uh-huh.
You know, with an X-Acto knife or,
right,
you know, a utility knife, something like that.
Yeah, I have an X-Acto knife set. Oh, I hear the school bell.
Yeah.
I hear the old school bell ringing.
It's that time.
Well.
Time's up. I guess we're back to the dredges, y'all.
I guess we need to call Max when he gets through with this thing and find out how it turned out and maybe talk to Sue.
Yeah,
and find out what she thought.
Yeah, I think we need to talk to Sue.
I think we do. I think that'd be important.
Ask Max if it's in the house, and then we'll ask Sue. That's the deal.
Yeah, that's the deal right there.
Well, Brother Campbell, that sounds like you're having a good time.
We're off on Sundays, my friend. We're off. But we start Elm Street, and then after that, it's on to Manhattan.
Well, you tell them hello, and make sure they listen to the show on
we'll do
this
that. Y'all
weekend.
Got a lot of fans up here.
Appreciate it.
All right. And, have a great one down there in Texas.
Thank you, sir.
Send me some Mexican food and warm weather, please.
That's we'll do
right.
that. Yeah. We'll talk to you in a day or two.
All right.
Dale Campbell getting him a brand-new dog from Morristown, New Jersey. The original C&I. All there was when I was growing up was C&I.
Oh, that's right.
The original
They were the one.
Everybody called them C&I dogs.
John Jolly, we appreciate your contribution. You've... Are you asleep?
Nope.
No, he's
sitting
he's
almost drunk.
Sitting in there playing his little drum.
Yeah.
And Max Robinson building the radio desk.
Yeah.
Don Pat, of course, is always with us.
Do we have time for a little quick story? Right.
Well, you'd have to hurry.
We'll hurry. Emily's daughter, who's an animal person that has degrees in O&M, was hired by Seeing Eye Dog to be a trainer, but she had met the man of her love here, and so she declined the job.
And she didn't go.
No. She's very good with dogs.
Is that right?
Oh, how about that?
I didn't realize that. Yeah. All right, let's go to your house. What do you think?
The limo is on its way.
Tim coming.
Right.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Good to have you with us, Don Shaw, as always.
Yeah, wrap up
Thank
another one.
We've wrapped up another one. I'm Phil Parr, and we'll do it again next week. I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.